Welcome to another episode of Extra Features Movie Review Podcast, episode 280. We're closing in on 300. I'm Kevin.
I'm Veronica Lake.
You're on the take.
I am.
I'm Doug.
Intern. But no one cares.
No, I mean, thousands of people aren't writing to you daily saying they care?
Nope.
Well, that's nobody writes me either, so don't worry about it. So,
I'm
Doug,
about it. I could care less.
I really enjoy going through my Facebook feed and seeing friends of mine out for a lovely family outing.
Yes, it is nice.
Which was fabulous. You went to a pub. But the funny thing was, it was missing you. So were you replaced?
Yes, my family has decided to replace me with, you know, a younger, more attractive model, so.
Well, that's okay. So is that why the barbecue was unavailable to me?
Yes, because I was home, they went out without me.
Okay. Now, what did young, better-looking you order, if you know?
I believe it was a pork banh mi burger.
A pork what burger? Banh mi?
Banh mi. It's Vietnamese. It has, like, pickled radishes and onions. It's
have
good.
Have you never heard of Banh mi boys burritos?
No.
Okay, they're very popular here.
It's something I don't eat, so that's probably I wouldn't go. Okay. But no one cares about what I eat, so.
So I'm just looking at the table there. Is that fries or something in the center? The remnants?
Yes, fries with pimento cheese and bacon.
Nice.
Yeah, but like he wasn't there, so he just got
like
this second head.
Kind of.
American version of poutine.
Yeah, Americans don't know what poutine is. They really don't.
Well, we have disco fries in Jersey, which are similar.
Yeah, disco fries are great.
Okay, what's I'm so Canadian here. What's a disco fry?
Yeah, pretty much exactly the same as poutine. It's gravy and cheese on top of french fries.
Hold on. What kind of cheese and how thick is the gravy?
I don't think it's cheese curd.
No, it's not curd. The one diner I've been to had a provolone cheese or mozzarella.
Mm. Yeah, it's not poutine.
So it's not exactly the same.
That's not okay. Now, what beverage did either you drink, do you think, that he would have ordered?
Red Stripe beer.
Nice, which is weird because I don't see it up here anymore. I mean, I'm sure you can get it at some establishments I've been to, but I haven't seen it, like, available to be purchased at our local liquor stores.
The younger, more attractive me would say it's a good beer.
Now, that's my last question, and then I promise we'll start the show because I'm just randomly rambling because that's what I like to do.
Yes.
Do you in Jersey have liquor stores and beer stores, or is always one?
All in one.
All in one. So it's like here. Okay. So the supermarket sells rum and stuff, or do I have to go somewhere else to buy that?
Some supermarkets do, some don't, but there are liquor stores that sell everything.
Excellent. So, Kevin, this is your big week of lists. I mean, you finally stopped traveling. You finally have time for the show again.
Oh, thank God. Thank God. I'm done with traveling for a while.
Well, our good friend host, who's usually here, is not here tonight. I wonder what he's doing. So I've made a list of things he may be doing, and we could pick one of them and pretend that's what he might be up to.
I thought he had to get up early to make the donuts.
He does, but that's not as much fun as the things I made up.
No.
I think, he's becoming a zookeeper, which I think he has to be there.
Bad time of year for that.
Two, I think he might have become like one of those people that works in a senior's home and become a helper, maybe in the laundry or something.
The shit cleaner?
Yeah, well, I was going to get there, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Three, I think he'd be a perfect fry guy at McDonald's.
Okay.
Or four, he's going to be my personal drive-through bitch in my local Tim Hortons.
So it's neither, none of those, right?
Oh, it's probably number four, more likely.
That's a bit of a drive.
I heard he was harvesting the spice melange on planet Arrakis.
He could be. He'd be joining me in my new job. Who's in Dune, Doug?
Well, who's before he takes his job, I would say he should watch out for fear, because fear is the mind killer.
It's true.
Yeah.
Who's in Dune? Just about everybody in Hollywood. So I'll knock it down to like seven. We have Timothy Chalamet. You got Rebecca Ferguson, Oscar Isaac, Jason Momoa, Stellan Skarsgård, Zendaya, Josh Brolin, Javier Bardem, Dave Bautista. The list goes on. And it was directed by Denis Villeneuve.
Yes. I'll kick it off, I guess. So great cast, amazing looking film, great visuals, a very good adaptation of the first half of the Dune novel. But I thought, I didn't think there was a lot of new ground covered from the 1984 version. I was watching it and I'm like, it's the same, it's the same dialogue, same source. So the dialogue's gonna be the same. And the same events happen, essentially, you know, maybe we get a breakfast here or a little extended fight scene there. For a very long movie, for 2.5 hours, we only get half of the story. So lots of panoramic shots of beautiful ornithopters. I have to say the ornithopters were fantastic, well-designed, kind of like grasshoppers. Some gender-bending, recasting, some very, you know, a lot of stuff from the novel I thought was ignored in order to present the cast that was presented there. Because I think the problem with the setting of Dune in the novel is it's after thousands of years of genetic breeding and race wars and robot wars, and you know, there's no AI, so it's humans have to be the computers, which is why you have those mentats that drink the whatever that juice is that stains their lips and all that stuff. I thought that having seen the 1984 movie better informed me for this version, because there's not a lot of exposition. And there is a lot of exposition in the other version. So you're already familiar with all those things if you've seen the old movie. But I think if you walked in cold, you would not know what any of this was. I think you'd find it really confusing. And I have heard that quite a bit from friends and spouses and so forth who've gone in cold, like the intern, and they're like, what does this mean? I don't know where I am, how, like, so far in the future. I also found they were far too relatable. That's like 22,000 years from now. They were living way too close and similar a life to our own. So, I mean, but that's just my own thing. So overall, I would say, Worth the spectacle, but I don't think you take away much more from it than you did from the other version. Yeah, I think you got more from the other version because it was a complete story. So, okay. And it didn't have the weirdness. That's the other thing too, is the Lynch movie had some weirdness in it, which I kind of missed in this version. Like the milking of cats and the heart plugs. Yeah. And the Baron's weird, homosexual obsession with his nephew and all that stuff.
Oh, that's in the book. That is 100% from the book.
Oh, yeah. But that's not there in this version. This one is basically, it's Skarsgård, looking, you know, very morose and bathing in mud and stuff. So anyway, I would say it's worth a watch, but I wouldn't say it's the most amazing movie of this year. So.
Oh, Kevin. So many problems with what you said.
Yeah.
I've read the book, so I mean, to me, this is just the cat's meow to me. I think a lot of that exposition's not needed. I maybe because I'm coming from the book and I've seen the Lynch version,
that's
I knew
problem.
What I was getting into.
That's my point.
I know.
Is but you are familiar with it.
This is just beautiful to look
sure.
at. Just wonderful helicopters. Good actors doing their job.
Mm-hmm.
Not confusing me, adding things like the Lynch version that didn't need to be there. It's 2.5 hours of a masterpiece. Dialogue is nice. They spend 10 minutes discussing trees, which is just phenomenal. The world looks perfect. It doesn't look like a soundstage like the Lynch version did to me. I don't like the Lynch flair and the Lynch weirdness. I don't want that from Dune. To me, it's Dune's a very sterile universe. And it's all based on religion and depth. I wanted, this is what my Dune feels like and what my world of Dune in my head looks like. I do miss a little bit more of the Aes-Sedai talking, which they don't really have in the movie, which I would have appreciated. Because they talk a lot in their heads and they go on to pages about thoughts and things are going to happen. And I noticed that was dropped, which is kind of annoying. But how are you going to display that on film? I really can see why that got dropped. So I kind of got to let that go. That's probably my biggest complaint. And also it kind of just ends. Like it doesn't really give people like Bob or your friends that haven't read the books the next chapter they need. Like the big stuff is coming. Like what we just saw is a 2.5 hour really prequel to what is going to be the 2 hour extravaganza of just hardcore action and stuff where things start getting really violent. I thought all the casting was phenomenal. I thought Josh Brolin was great. I mean, Oscar Isaac, I mean, just does a wonderful job in everything I see him in. He was just absolutely perfect. And Timothée Chalamet actually grew on me as the film went. I was a little worried about him because I got to say I prefer Kyle MacLachlan. Even after finishing this, I'd rather have that young Kyle MacLachlan look perfect to me as Paul Moody. And Timothée Chalamet still looks too young. Rebecca Ferguson is still becoming an outstanding actor. Every time I see her, I find her just very strong in everything she plays. And Zendaya, we're going to have to see. I mean, she doesn't really do a lot here. I mean, she does a lot to do in the next section, a ton. And, I mean, we're going to see some more worms in the next one. But, I mean, for me, this is just what I've wanted my whole life. So, but again, I'm not going to say I'm a Dune apologist. I just love these books. So, to me, this is what I wanted. And I'm not a Lynch fan, so maybe that's my problem. And also, I'd say people, they should watch the sci-fi channels, 4 hours, I think it's 4 hours of Dune, if they want a lot of the stuff they missed. That's probably, if you want to get it all, that's probably the best one to watch for a primer for this, because they'll fill in a lot of the holes you need, if they have more time. I mean, I guess your argument is he had 2.5 hours, and I agree, but I could not stop watching this. He could have had a 5 hour part one, and I would have just enjoyed it as much, but. That's me. Intern?
Am I on here? Yep, I'm on. You said that I quote, you enjoyed 10 minutes of them talking about trees. Anytime else that they're talking about anything, even trees related or whatever, you said, I'm bored. Then that's you. Anyway, I never read the book. I never saw the original movie. I actually fell asleep the first time. Nodded off the second time, and it took me the third time to watch the whole thing. I sat there and I'm going, there's a lot of sand here. Okay, the cast was great, but I guess I was missing something, maybe, because, like, I didn't like it. And I guess I saw a lot of sand, and that's all I saw.
So what you're saying is all you saw was a lot of sand, so you didn't really see anything else?
I didn't see the worm thing till the end, and they were talking about the worms during the movie, but I never saw one until the end. I'm going, what am I missing?
Did you miss the part where the spice machine?
I saw the sand go like that, but I'm by that time I was going, who cares?
This wasn't my kind of movie, I guess. No. You're saying who cares?
It's sci-fi. I like sci-fi, so. Oops.
You like Star Trek, and to me, this is very similar to the first Star Trek film, which you love. Not much happens.
Close to the first Star Trek film. It's more like number 5, where they just walk along, this is all set up.
Looking for God.
Yeah, this whole film is just a big setup for part 2.
Listen for me.
Okay, which is
fine.
Can
you move on to Doug now, please?
I'm not done. I will finish. We'll get to Doug.
I'm done.
No fear. I'm not. I'm just saying. I mean, you didn't enjoy the giant spaceships. You didn't enjoy the dialogue. Nothing appeals to
me. I've seen it all before. Like, I've seen the spaceships before. Star Wars, Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica, all spaceships.
They weren't shot this well.
Well, maybe I'm missing something. Maybe I have to go see it again.
Absolutely.
Doug completely skipped the navigators.
They did.
Navigators?
The deformed creatures that are spice navigators.
Never saw
that. That fold space and allow you to transport large things through space.
Correct.
Okay.
Which is how they got from the planet of House of Atreides at the beginning to Dune.
In like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Star Trek would have a full movie about it.
I guess I'm with Simon on this. I kind of loved this movie. I read the novel, but only the first one. I haven't gone beyond the first Frank Herbert novel. And I've seen the David Lynch. I'm a huge Lynch fan, so I've seen it. I loved this movie. I thought it was gorgeous from beginning to end. I don't really get the complaint about the confusingness. I think if people can follow Game of Thrones, which has many more characters, many more houses, if they could follow that, they should be able to follow Dune. I didn't really find it all that confusing. There's two major houses, and then there's the Freemen out there, and basically just three big factions at the moment. My only kind of complaint is I don't think they really distinguished why you needed both Gurney Halleck and Duncan Idaho. They both kind of serve the same purpose in this film. I understand why there's two separate characters later in the story, based on the novel and the Lynch version, but in this specific film, I'm not sure they distinguish between those two characters enough. But that's really my only complaint for this film. I had a blast watching it, and I'd like to watch it again. Even though it's 2.5 hours, though that time flew by for me. It didn't register with me at all. Unlike some movies coming up later that we'll be discussing that were shorter but felt twice as long to me. That's just my take.
What did you feel about the casting? I thought the casting was perfect.
I thought the casting was absolutely amazing. Oscar Isaac in anything gets my interest. Like you said before, Rebecca Ferguson is just fantastic in just about everything I've seen her in. And Timothée Chalamet, I was never a big fan, but he really won me over in Little Women. So after seeing that, I was looking forward to seeing what he would do with Paul Atreides in this film.
Did you enjoy the 10-minute talking about trees, which I just think is just fascinating because I'm like all over it?
Not as much as I like just the discussion of watering the trees and why it was important to have them there on the planet and why the water needed to be on the trees. I like that.
I totally do. Okay. Right. I guess.
And then 5 minutes later, they were burned down.
Oh, well, it happens.
Right. Well, that's what happens when Harkonnens come.
Nasty Harkonnens.
Okay.
So I guess next we will be traveling to the Marvel Cinematic Universe with Eternal.
A well-named film.
Yes. It was quite long.
It's written and directed by Chloe Zhao, recent Oscar winner, starring Gemma Chan, Richard Madden, Angelina Jolie, Salma Hayek, Kit Harington, Kumail Nanjiani, Liam McHugh, Brian Tyree Henry, Lauren Ridloff, Barry Keoghan, and Ma Dong Seok.
Who is that? Is that the one of the Eternals?
Gilgamesh.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was.
He was credited under a different name, but in IMDb, that's how he's listed, so I apologize for that.
Oh, good. Intern, you're up.
Okay, I saw this. There was just too much going on, like too many characters, too many stories. They could have just, like, the movie was too long. They should have shortened it, focused on just like a couple of, maybe two or three characters. I didn't really enjoy the amount of time given. Like, there wasn't enough time given to flesh out a character, I thought, but I could be wrong. Obviously, I'm wrong with the other one, so we'll take this one. But it was too long, too many characters, and it's just like the story was just blah. If that's to me, but next.
Well, that was a very in-depth discussion there, intern. I had many problems with this, but I also had many positives with this. So I'll start with the negative. I just had a lot of problems with the first hour, the flashing forward and back and forward and back. I'm like, I don't care. I got it. I got the point the first time we were here. And, you know, and they're going through all that. And then they went back there later in the film when they're getting the team back together. I'm like, why are we doing this twice? Like, there's got to be an easier way to do this. I understand they're all showered and cast if they don't like it, but they need to come together quickly for me. I found some of the dialogue was needless. Like, I found they sat around and chatted way too often about stuff, especially when they were chatting with the Barry Keoghan when the deviants were showing up and attacking him. And he was like, I don't care. Like, I got it. Let's get moving on this. Like, I just find it was dragging at that point. The positive, Gemma Chan, just outstanding actor. Again, really powerful. I was really impressed. And Richard Madden plays the other lead, Icarus. Mm-hmm. I thought he was wonderful. Again, I found Salma Hayek kind of wasted. I don't really feel she had much to do. Like, she seemed to show up, talk for a bit, and then just sort of get killed off. And I'm like, I don't really care. The Sprite character really annoyed me. Again, I don't think she really had a point other than being in love with Icarus. You know? And, when we're getting the band back together, I was just getting bored. Because by the time we get to Gilgamesh, I'm like, can we get going? Like, I got it. Can we just go pick everybody up? But I got to admit, his storyline with his husband, I had the right guy, right? Or I had the wrong guy. Bastos was amazing. Good. I don't know who this actor was. I don't think I've seen him a lot, but...
Brian Tyree Henry?
Should I know him?
He's amazing. He's on Atlanta, the TV show Atlanta. He's been on Broadway a bunch. He had one scene in... I'm blanking on the movie now. Regina King won the Oscar for the movie.
I saw that movie.
Yeah, I'm blanking on the name, but he had one scene in that where he was fantastic. He should be a much bigger star than he is right now.
Yeah, he was wonderful. He amazed me. So I did, of all those flashback picking up the band sequences, we could have cut half of them and just had him. I quite liked him. He really, really impressed me as an actor. I'm like, wow, this guy gets his scene. Shows me the scene, and I wanted to stay longer with his character. He's the one character of all the ones, like, obviously besides Icarus and whatever Gemma Chan's character is, and Sprite, which is fine. I understand why we needed Sprite. I just didn't care for her. I wanted more of him. I thought he was a very interesting character that was underdeveloped and underutilized in this film. That the jokes when his son calls him Superman, I couldn't stop laughing. I thought that was great. So I thought that was a positive, Gemma Chan. I did like the fight scene at the end of the film. I thought it was really good. I really quite enjoyed the fight scene. I like that whole, but again, I'm getting on. This is just too long a runtime for me. Getting the band back together took long. I really don't think they had a lot of purpose. I mean, fighting the deviants was kind of dull. I mean, we've seen so much of these type of creatures with that Chris Pratt movie, Tomorrow War, we watched, and looks like the same guys. I think they just found them left over from the Tomorrow work. I didn't really notice the difference. And that kind of stuff. I mean, I see some Chloe Zhao flares in the film. A lot of her beautiful cinematography shots I do see here, which I thought were quite nice. Especially at the beginning when she's doing that shot over London. I thought that was wonderful. And I know English people keep going on about Camden and all these articles I read, but I don't know where Camden is, so... I wouldn't recognize it, but it's in every movie, they tell me. So, Eternals, I think, is okay. My favorite part was Kit Harington, which I thought, again, was underutilized, but it's not his movie. So I really can't complain. So I'm sure Kevin will want to discuss more of the cutscene than I'm going to. So I'm going to be quiet. So I'm going to give Eternals an okay rating.
Okay, so Eternals, where to begin? So first off, it was too long, but it wasn't long enough. And I think this movie, I think this was a bad choice to make this a theatrical release and not do this as a 6-hour Disney Plus series.
I think you're right.
I think a Disney Plus series would have allowed them to stretch it out, give us more backstory to the Eternals, more gravitas to what was going on at the end with this, with the Celestials and the birth of the new Celestial, and them, of course, defying their programming to fight against the birth of that Eternal, of that Celestial, I should say. The casting was great. I mean, I have no complaints about the casting. Fun fact about Brian Tyree Henry is that he was the voice of Miles Morales' father in Into the Spider-Verse. So he does have a Marvel connection already. I thought Icarus was the big reveal with Icarus wasn't that great of a big of a deal to me. I thought it was, you know, basically if you look back at what he did, some of the things that he did essentially foiled his own plans and caused them to revolt against the Celestials in the end. So if he just let people alone and not gotten involved, then nothing like this all would have happened. Earth would have been destroyed. So I thought that was really strange. So the story itself was not well conceived, I thought. I went to a movie theater and saw it in 3D with D-Box, with the moving seats. And it was the worst D-Box movie because there's nothing goes on for most of the movie. It's those beautiful Chloe Zhao vistas and countryside and wonderful caves and early man, early society. And your chair doesn't move for all of that stuff because you're stagnant. You're just watching people. So you get a couple of wake you up, shaking your chair fight scenes with what were quite possibly the worst version of deviants I've imagined bringing to the screen. Because in the Eternal story, which is terrible, I don't like the Eternals at all, first off. That's an awful comic. Just really, he wanted to do New Gods. He left DC, so he did Marvel versions of New Gods. And it's just not great. But one of the things about the Eternals is that the deviants are like every other superhero concept. The deviants are the opposite numbers. They're intelligent. They come in every shape and size, but they're monsters, right? So they want to destroy humanity, but because they want to conquer it. They want to take it over. They want to be free. And then the Eternals oppress them in a sense. These are just ropey CGI monsters that absorb powers. And I thought, okay, by the time you get to close to the end of the film, Crow, who is a red-faced devil-looking Eternal or Celestial, no, sorry, Deviant. I keep mixing up those. Deviant in the comics, kind of like Thanos, right? Except he's red and a little bit smaller and he wears sunglasses. In this movie, he's a ropey monster and eventually he starts to look like a guy and then he's dead. So it would have been nice to see his evolution and see him become more human-like as he absorbs the energies of Eternals. That would have been more interesting. That was an interesting idea, but I don't think they explored it well enough. You know, the whole thing, oh, we didn't fight to stop Thanos because, okay, whatever. The whole thing about the return of the humans sparking the birth of the Celestial, okay. It does lead some credibility to Thanos doing what he did. So was Thanos, in fact, trying to reduce the populations to prevent the birth of Celestials from inhabited planets? Was that why he was trying to, it wasn't a resource thing, it was, he knew that something was waiting to be born from the planets and reducing the population would have delayed those things from happening. It makes you almost want to medicate, like Bob, there with his medication. So that stuff really kind of bothered me. And then the fact that the Eternals were made, doesn't make a lot of sense when you have a new Eternal show up at the end of the film claiming he was born and has a sibling. And we know that Thanos has a father. So if Thanos would in theory be an Eternal based on what's presented here, an Eternal from the planet Titan, who would have been responsible to another celestial, I gather. So maybe different powers. I don't know, different story. Anyway, overall, I liked it, but I didn't love it. I thought it was overlong, but it could have been better paced and given some room on Disney Plus that would have made it more enjoyable. So, and it was dark. It was really way too dark in 3D. Looked terrible. It's like Captain Marvel.
I didn't see it. I saw it in 2D.
Yeah. Hopefully it was brighter. And then the whole thing with Dane Whitman.
That's what I wanted to discuss.
Much better.
Dane Whitman was just there to sort of get him in for the next franchise that he'll be part of. So, I mean, he was fine. It was funny to see him interact with Richard Madden, his brother from Game of Thrones. But and then did you catch in the end credits scene when he's looking at the sword?
Yes.
Did you catch who was talking to him?
I couldn't figure it out.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Chloe Zhao revealed who it was. Do you want to know who it was?
Yeah.
Mahershala Ali.
Blade?
It was Blade. Yeah.
So because Black it's a sword.
Yeah.
So he's going to team up with
Blade. Blade shows up wherever there's a sword. That's a new thing.
Well, interesting enough, Blade was based in England in the comics originally.
He was.
And he was English. So it sounds like he's still American in this version, but he's in England.
Okay. So I took my daughter to see this because Kevin always tells me I have to bring the younger generation to see these films. So I listen to him occasionally. Now, I don't know if my daughter was into this or not. And then I said, she's about to go. I said, no, there's one more credit. We have to wait. So my theater is pretty much empty for maybe five people. My back row, because I'm in the back row, because I wasn't a big theater. And Troll comes up, Pip. Is it Pip or Troll, yeah, whatever, comes on, and my daughter's kind of look, and she goes, is that Harry Styles? Oh, my God! And she loses it. I mean, full-on loses her crap in the theaters. She's like, Dad, yeah, I want to see that movie. So whatever you guys want to say about Harry Styles and acting, yeah, they don't care. My daughter was so excited to see Harry Styles in this movie.
Yep.
It was phenomenal stunt casting. She's going to see that movie. Whatever it is, I have to take her to see it because Harry Styles. She lost it.
And it's funny because Star Fox is probably the most date-rapey character in the Marvel
universe. Yeah. But she is 100% on board for whatever movie Star Fox is in. She wants to see it.
Nice.
I haven't spoken yet, so I'll give my thoughts. I thought it was, like everybody said, it was overlong. I did genuinely enjoy the movie. It's not going to sound like it, but I did. I thought it was gorgeous. It was beautifully shot, just like Nomadland. Chloe Zhao knows where to put a camera, knows when to put up the camera at magic hour. But I think that was part of the fault with the film. When you're using like natural lighting and stuff, it got very difficult to see the fight, tell what was going on when they were in the Amazon. That stuff, it got incredibly dark. It was hard to make out what was going on in the foliage. I also thought that for a big budget Marvel film, it had some really janky CGI at times.
Mm-hmm.
The establishing shot of Kingo's plane looked awful. Pip the Troll looked awful at the end.
His head. What was up with that?
Yeah. When Sprite put the baby costume on Gilgamesh, that looked really bad. My last big complaint, Kingo was not part of the final fight. He just leaves at the end.
Yes.
Kumail Nanjiani was one of the, along him, Brian Tyree Henry, two of the most dynamic, engaging characters in this movie, and one of them just fucks off back to India to make movies.
You know, I kept expecting him to show up in the final battle and redeem that walk away, but no.
Hold on.
Father.
We forgot.
Or even some with the Unimind at the end.
Yeah.
That he would connect, like, if he was filming and then all of a sudden he would float in the air and connect with his Unimind with everybody else, but no, he just left.
Yeah. Didn't bother.
I gotta say, I forgot my favorite character. I totally forgot. Alfred in this movie was phenomenal. Yeah. His buddy and the 50 cameras. How many cameras? Oh, you need a backup? Broke me up. I did laugh at that scene when Sprite keeps breaking the cameras and he's blowing out another one. I'm like, that is funny. He was good. I thought he was an excellent character for what he did. He probably got paid some decent coin for this, and good for him. I don't know who he was, but he can come back anytime. I like to see him and Wong from Doctor Strange hanging out for a buddy picture.
So is that it?
That's it. We're waiting for the next one.
So I guess that one didn't fall too hard, but pretty hard. Oh. So now I guess we got the harder they fall. If I'm taking this over from Daniel, I have to have the bad transitions. The Harder They Fall, written, directed by James Samuel, starring Jonathan Majors, Zazie Beetz, RJ Seiler, Eddie Gathegi, Chase Dillon, Idris Elba, Regina King, and Damon Wayans Jr.
Oh, who gets to go first? It's Kevin's turn, isn't it?
I don't know. I can go first.
Perfect.
I love this movie. I thought this was so much fun. I thought, I love early, but they're a bit stale at times. And this, I thought, just had an energy and I don't give a shit attitude about things that I thought, combined with the music and the cast. And of course, I love the cast. Idris Elba. What's his name? The guy, Kang the Conqueror.
Jonathan Majors.
Jonathan Majors. The lead from Watchmen, Regina King. Plus Catwoman, Zoe Kravitz, and so forth. Just fantastic and lovely action sequences, over the top. Damon Wayans Jr. was kind of funny. Overall, I just had a lot of fun with this movie. And it was an over the top Western, but, it was fun. It was kind of reminded me of like a Tarantino film. That kind of fun energy. And that's all I have to say.
Oh, I have much more to say than that. Casting, Regina King can be in any movie for me, and I'm happy. Mm-hmm. This was fun, and I'm not a big Western fan. I don't mind them. But, oh, my God, they played their characters perfectly. I love how it was based on fictional characters, but most of them really exist. I liked the beginning. I wasn't quite sure where it went, and then I realized they advanced quickly in age. And I liked it. I loved the shootout at the end. I thought it was great. Mm-hmm. I like scenes in the middle. I thought all the characters had depth. I knew what they were going to do. I knew what their direction was. I like the gunplay. I just wish Lakeith Stanfield had more to do just because I'm such a big Lakeith Stanfield, but I was just happy to see him work again. This is fun. I don't know what to say. I mean, there wasn't a lot of horse riding in it, which I thought was kind of missing from this Western, maybe because they don't know how to ride the actor. Or maybe because it was such a low budget, they couldn't afford horses other than what they had, so they couldn't really do a lot of stunt work. But overall, it's fun. Like I said, it's nice to see a fun Western for a change that I could actually enjoy that I didn't fall asleep 14 times during. So, yeah, I'm going to give this the same as you. It's fun. Watch it.
Yeah, I had a blast with this. It's basically League of Extraordinary Gentlemen for Westerns. Just taking a bunch of different characters. What I found interesting, though, is they didn't really all live at the same time. Mm. So they're all taken from different time periods and put into one story. That didn't bother me at all. I had an absolute blast with this. It did feel a little long to me, I will be honest. I thought maybe the bank robbery scene could have been taken out. And just at the end, when Jonathan Majors goes to town to get Zazie Beetz, that brings about the final gunfight instead of him coming, talking, having to go back, rob the bank, and then come back again. I kind of would have got rid of that one part. But aside from that, it was great. I love Westerns. I love all the actors. And everybody in the house, we all watched it together. We agree. No matter how attractive you are, if you put on a cowboy outfit, you're 10 times more attractive. So this was probably the hottest movie we've watched this year.
Hold on. I'm not letting you guys get away that easily. Good try, though. So the whole family watched it. Tina watched it?
Yep.
So did the barbecue...
Idris Elba's in it. Idris Elba's in it. Well, he is the hottest person on the planet. You put him in a cowboy outfit, he's 100 times hotter. Yes, Tina watched it.
Now, see, my wife would argue Denzel's in the movie. She's it. Doesn't matter what movie it is, she's watching that Denzel movie with me. I'm not allowed to watch it without her. So, when your kids are watching this, do they get to use the barbecue? Is the barbecue in the use, or is it too cold?
It was cold. We ordered, I think we had Indian food that night.
See, I'm moving in with Doc, man. I get to go to this cool Vietnamese pub I wasn't invited to. Didn't get barbecue time because the other Doug was there. I got that. Indian food. We got to move, Kevin. I mean, where I'm out here, like, it's just not as good. I don't have Vietnamese food in my neighborhood.
They have it here.
Well, because it's where you live.
Yeah,
I can order whatever I want. If I can go to DoorDash or Uber Eats or whatever and order any culture's food I want.
I probably could, but it'd be 45 minutes till I got it. That might be a little bit more of my issue.
You're out in the middle of the earth.
I'll watch your Vietnamese food out on Shepherd and Kennedy and all around that area.
Sure.
But you're not out here.
No, I'm in Burbs.
You're out in the Burbs.
Yeah, all I have is big chains and occasionally I get something I like. Okay, intern.
A lot of white people in your area, so.
This is going to be a first for this.
A lot of
this.
Diversity. Sorry, go ahead.
This is going to be a first for this podcast. And it's a Western I actually enjoyed. From start to finish, and I had to keep checking IMDb as I watched it. I'm going, who's this? But I really, like, from start to finish, it was good. So actress that played Cuffy, at first I thought it was a guy, and then I looked and I'm going, that's a girl. And then she looks at there was a scene where he gives her a dress, and she looks at it like, no. And that was a funny part, that, like, and her eyes are just bugged out, and I'm going, this, and it was fun watching Idris Elba coming out of that, this wasn't that small, cube on the train, not a cube, the jail, whatever it was.
That was cool. I like that scene.
Yeah, I like that too. Like, and he says, everyone but him, done, shoot him. And I'm going, uh-oh. And they just shot everyone. And like, from start to finish, this movie, like, the cast was good. The set design was good. Like, I know it's like, and it was like, they were going on different places. And I just, from the start to the finish, I really enjoyed it.
Best part of the movie?
I was upset about the two movies.
When they went to the white town, and it was all white.
Yeah, and they looked around.
And they laughed at her at the bank. I want to make a withdrawal, and they started laughing at her.
Yeah.
You have to have an account to make a withdrawal. Sorry, Bob, go ahead.
I think I'm done. It was a good movie from start to finish, so I just had my attention all the way through. Didn't fall asleep.
Well, that's always good.
Yeah.
So do you think it would have helped them to rob the bank if they had an army of thieves?
They kind of did, though, didn't they?
They did have an army of thieves.
But they didn't have Dieter.
Did not. Army of Thieves was directed and starring Matthias Schweighofer. I'm guessing I'm pronouncing that correct.
Who cares?
Also starring Natalie Emanuel, Ruby Fee, Stuart Martin, And that's about it, big name wise, I would say.
Can I start, guys? Can I please start?
Go for it.
Sure. I friggin' have so many problems with this film. It is funny. It annoys me. Who made Dieter the main character? He is so annoying. His voice, him talking, I don't care. This film is grating on me constantly. I'm just sitting there going, why am I, none of these people can act is my first argument. They're terrible. I saw some of the direction level of Dieter, because I think he directed it too, did he not?
Yes.
Terrible. Garbage shooting. I'm just like, do you know what you're doing? Because I haven't seen any signs of any.
He's actually a pretty popular director in Germany.
Exactly. In Germany, I think is my point there. I did not enjoy this in any way. I didn't like the characters. I thought they were all very cookie cutter. I thought Brian Cage was awful most of the time. The guy that drove the car, I think he was Indian, but I could be wrong. He was awful. I just did not like this film. Dieter just rambling on. I thought that police detective chasing them down was terrible. Dialogue was bad most of the time. I'm kind of like, this is what I think Zack Snyder has become. Terrible. I don't like this at all. Maybe if he directed it, it would have been a little bit better, some of the shots. Unintelligible at times, I thought this film. I thought it was just so boring. You know, I didn't enjoy any of the heists. I love heist movies, but none of these heists were interesting. They're all just kind of dull. They're like, remind me a lot, like they ripped off Baby Driver. Oh, we saw Baby Driver. We'll do that. And they're kind of trying to do Baby Driver without the music. And it just didn't work for me. So I'm giving you a non-recommend.
I hate to say it, but I agree with Simon. This movie was just not for me at all. I felt that the two characters of Cage and the driver, they added nothing to the film.
Nothing! What did they do of interest?
They didn't do anything, and if it was just Dieter and the two women from the start, it would have been the same film. You would have had the same story, pretty much. It was overly long. It was shorter than both Eternals and Dune, but it felt twice as long to me. I don't know why. I just did not care for it. Nobody was asking for it. Did anybody really want to see the continuing adventures of Dieter or what happened to Dieter before the zombie outbreak in Army of the Dead? I just did not care for this.
Hold on. Before we let you go, that one scene where they have a reporter on scene in Las Vegas, the reporters, yes. That was hysterical. Oh, wait, we got to tie this into another movie? We better throw a scene in. Hey, what's going on over there? Okay, we can't really hear them. Okay, I go, that was kind of funny. Totally useless, but kind of funny.
Well, I 100% disagree with both of you because I enjoyed this. I thought this was actually a lot of fun. I didn't know Dead much, and I thought that character was bizarre in the other movie, but at least I was familiar with him by the end. So it wasn't a terrible transition to see his origins in a sense. So, you know, I mean, essentially the story in Army of the Dead is they've got to crack the God of Dabarung and get whatever's inside out. And so this tells us the story of the fact that the God of Dameron is the fourth and final safe in of a series of four. And so he has to crack the other three as sort of his task. So he'd always talked about safe cracking but never actually done it. So he was doing YouTube videos on, which I thought were quite funny. I thought they're very well done and very informative and a great way to transition to give you all this exposition about what the safes were, who created them, the backstory, the Wagner off or the Wagner operas, how each safe had a hidden story to it. And only he, you know, and appreciating Wagner, you would understand in a sense how to crack the safe. I thought that was all really clever, and I thought Dieter was an unconventional character. And I don't think he's a cookie cutter character by any means. I thought he was very interesting.
Everybody else.
And I thought Natalie Emmanuel, I mean, I'll watch anything she's in any day of the week. She's fantastic. Not a great actress, but she's gorgeous.
Okay. Yes, I'll agree with you on that one.
And I liked the hacker girl. She was good too. And those other idiots did serve a purpose, right? So their screw up allows for the final sacrifice. They're caught because of one guy's phone being on. Natalie forgot to turn off her phone. So, whatever Brian Cage or Brad Cage is able to track her. And then, what he does leads the police to catching them at the final scene. I thought it was interesting. I thought the zombie stuff was just sort of in the background, which I preferred because I'm sick of zombie stuff. A little bit of humor bits. Some prescient dreams he was having about things that were going to happen, and it kind of leads doubt on what happened in Army of the Dead too, because there's some theories that are abound that he's stuck in a time loop as a result of starting the whole process. So and there are references to that in Army of Dead that the Gotterdammerung is a time loop itself. So something about this movie signals that there may in fact be a third film and that Dieter somehow survived the zombies and Army of the Dead. So I'm interested. I want to see more. For a free movie on Netflix, I liked it. So just like I liked The Hardy They Fall. So for me, I was two wins in a row.
Two wins in a row. Did you watch Love Hard to wrap that up?
No, I didn't.
Oh, wait for Love Hard.
I watched a lot of Seinfeld after that.
Fair enough. Intern?
Well, I can agree with Kevin because I really enjoyed that part, like where he's listening to the music as he was opening safe. And like he was listening to the tumblers as he was opening, and he like closed his eyes and listened and twisted them. And you're right, the other two people could have been go bye-bye. It was like him and Natalie and the other girl. But as you said, like you really enjoyed this movie. I enjoyed it too. And there was references to Army of the Dead, which thankfully there wasn't that many, but, I thought like listening and telling the story of, as you said, Kevin, about telling the story of the safes and the music, it was really good. So I have to say I really enjoyed it as well.
So split vote.
Split.
Daniel would have been the deciding vote, yes.
Daniel's too busy getting ready for his surgery tomorrow.
Okay. What's he getting done?
Well, I think he's getting some
removed from his coffee.
That's right. Two grains of coffee.
So wait, he's not standing trial in Italy for murder?
No, I thought it was Germany.
I was trying to do the segue to the next film.
Oh, sorry.
You hopped on that segue and drove it right in.
I was trying the segue to Stillwater.
I thought we were skipping Stillwater.
Oh, we are?
My favorite band from Almost Famous.
You said to do it because
because he and I who watched it, we could
okay,
do it.
Yeah, great.
Go ahead.
My bad.
All right.
That's Brady. If you want.
We lose Daniel and everything falls apart. Stillwater was directed by Tom McCarthy, starring Matt Damon, Camille Cotton, and Abigail Breslin. And I did not see this movie.
I saw it. It was painful. It was painful watching Matt Damon go through and try to understand what people were saying, and I didn't recognize him at first. I'm like, is that him? And it was him. But him with his daughter and Abigail Breslin is like, I forgot where it was going. But it didn't pull together for me. It just fell apart as the movie went on, and I'm going, it's not great.
It's friggin' boring.
Thank you.
Nothing happens. Literally, he walks around and talks. And talks to nobody. The French girl talks a lot. He just wanders around.
He did get beaten up, so there's that. Where there was that.
But it's just, I don't think he did any work in this film. I find he does no heavy lifting as a character. Everything's kind of given to him. He finds a job, no problem. He finds what he's looking for by the end of the film and frees Breslin. I just don't feel that anything in this film is interesting. It's just so bloody boring. It goes on. Dude, Kevin and Doug were saved by just an absolute boring film. My God, it's just painful. Literally, nothing happens.
I didn't watch it because I knew it was based on the Amanda Knox case, and I knew that the producers and writers did not actually go to Amanda Knox, ask her to do her story, talk to any of the real people involved in the real thing, the real case, and I don't know, it just, and who thought the idea would be to tell the Amanda Knox story from the point of view of her father? Mm. That's just ridiculous to me. So
well, that makes perfect
sense. That's why
sense.
I didn't watch it.
You guys missed nothing but absolute boredom. Literally, it was the dumbest thing I think I've ever watched this year. I'm just like, okay, is this ever going to end? Nope, we're going to talk some more. Nothing happens. Literally nothing happens of interest. Like, we're supposed to meet the villain of the story. Like, he's supposed to be looking for this kid that Abigail Breslin tells him. And he goes to the cafe and starts talking to these girls. And she's like, oh, don't talk to him because I'm from that area. So he finally gets to the area. And he finds the guy. Then the guy disappears. And then he gets a job. And then he randomly runs into him on his way home from the job and ties the guy up and puts him in the basement. Okay?
Now, whatever happened to the guy? I mean, like,
No, no, he escaped. They let him go. I think he lets him go.
I missed that part.
It doesn't really tell you, because the girl kind of helps him. The girl, he's staying with the French woman's daughter kind of thing. I think he lets the guy go or something. I mean, what's the guy's
like? I was a little lost with that part.
Who cared? It was so dumb.
Mm.
I don't know. They could have made this film by better by actually having some A, detective work. B, letting Matt Damon talk occasionally would help me. Or C, don't make this pile of crap at all. That would have been happier.
That would be good.
Continuing on. How's your house doing, Doug? Is Paranormal Activity picking up lately?
No Paranormal Activity. You skipped ahead on me. I was not ready for that movie.
Sorry.
Damn you.
That's why
we need Daniel.
Are you supposed to be wearing your grass slippers?
That's what I had prepared, but now I have Paranormal Activity.
Maybe that's what Daniel is doing. Daniel's preparing for his life as a stripper with glass slippers.
Well, that'll be
confused as to which movie we're doing.
All right. Well, I have Paranormal Activity up on my phone, so I guess we'll discuss that since it was directed by William Eubank and starring Emily Bader, Roland Buck III, Dan Lippert, Henry Ayers Brown, and who played the grandpa? Tom Nowicki.
Yeah, the great Tom Nowicki. He's IMDb sheets as long as my arm. Of nothing you've ever heard of. He's done his class production of Frankenstein and Little Red Riding Hood. He played a tree. Kevin?
What?
Atone for your sins for this film, please.
So first of all, I'm not a big fan of these types of movies, these cam movies.
I hate them.
Starting with Blair Witch. So this one, the three youths are contacted by a guy who may be Amish. It turns out the girl had been abandoned by her mother and she was part of this Amish family, so she has a chance to go to meet them and learn about them and stuff and sort of find your roots. And the whole thing is that she and her friends are going to make a documentary about this. I thought it was fine for what it was. I didn't hate it. I watched it. I did find at times there was some tenseness and anxiety as you waited for things to happen. I'm not sure I understand what was going on in the house, if everything was sort of maintained in the basement of that building church. In the middle of the forest hill. Yeah. So I don't understand what the ghost was that was haunting that house that caused things to happen when they were looking around at night. But yeah, I mean, basically, they're not Amish. I'm going to reveal it all. That they had a computer.
They're not Amish?
They pretend. No, they're not. They're not Amish.
They're Swedish.
No, they're Swedish.
They're not Amish. They're basically, they are the guardians of humanity against Asmodeus, who can hop from body to body, and his arrival hearkens the end of the world. So for some reason, the women in their family can contain the spirit of Asmodeus and prevent him from going out into the world. So they found the mother, and abandoning the child meant that if the mother, who they kept in, contained in the basement with the spirit inside of her, dies, then the spirit will be loose on the world. So that's the whole thing. And then she and her friends prevent the ceremony from happening, and I guess basically the world is ending at the end of it all, so, because the monster's loose. So some decent scares with the monster, with the dried up mother who's inhabited by the whole, sorry, someone commented on something on Facebook, so all my computers pinged at the same time. I don't know. I mean, I didn't hate it. For what it was some, if you like this kind of stuff, there's some good scares, some jump scares, some bloody murders. It's not quite as all cam heavy as the original Paranormal Activities. It's a little bit more story based, like a horror movie with a bunch of cam sequences in them. So, you know, if you're bored and you want to waste an hour and a half or 2 hours watching something like this, you can't go wrong, I guess. That would be my take on it.
Oh, hold on. Did you just say I couldn't go wrong?
If you like this kind of stuff.
You could.
Oh, no, I hate this kind of stuff.
Right.
It's so an hour and a half of pain you subject to me to, starting with the beginning. This movie's dull. Like, takes forever to get going, and nothing happens to really the last half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just didn't care about any character. I thought they were all bad. Yes, Kat, I agree with you. And I don't know. I thought it was kind of dumb. I think there should be a sequel to explain what happens to the demon now it's possessed a boy, a male. But, I mean, is every cop in every movie guaranteed to die when he shows up in these films? Like, you just see it. Like, it reminded me of Hellraiser... Eight. Then you sit there and you have this cop, this girl gets out of the window, same way in this one, but it's a guy, he comes out of the barn, and literally the cop goes, freeze, and you know the cop's dead 30 seconds later. So even
how does he shoot him? I didn't understand that. There was no gun. The cop has the gun, and he goes, bang, the guy goes,
because all of a sudden he dies
from a gunshot. I'm going, where did that come from?
He's a demon.
The demon made him shoot himself.
Yes.
Okay.
I just found this, again,
this movie.
My usual problem with Paranormal Activity movies, I'm bored. I don't like this kind of stuff. Wreck's the best found footage movie ever. Nothing else has beaten it for me. I do not like Blair Witch 1 or 2. These just don't do anything for me. I always find them boring. I'm waiting for the jump scare. Like, I know it's coming. Like, Paranormal Activity 1 was good. 3 I even kind of liked. But these, to me, are just, I don't care about the characters. I find the acting's always atrocious. You know, that's why I think they're always doing these found footage things, so you think it's just some guy hanging out at home with his camcorder, which is what they're supposed to be. They do nothing for me. I tried hard, but I'm like, we know that guy's a bad guy. As soon as they show up to the Amish place, the old guy comes out, I'm like, he's the villain. It's pretty evident. There's nobody else it could have been. I just don't find this interesting. I'd rather watch those two other detectives, the wife team that hunt nuns and stuff. I don't know. I find them more interesting.
The Conjuring?
The Conjuring people. I like them better.
Mm-hmm. The Warrens.
The Warrens. Who's next? Douglas?
I'm with Simon. I hated this movie. But I don't like found footage films. I didn't find any of the scary. And it also stopped being a found footage film for a minute there at the end when she's confronting the demon or the demon's attacking her cameraman. All of a sudden there was a reverse angle shot that should not have been there. The camera should not have been behind her looking at the demon because there was no camera there. But apparently there was in this movie. And I hate it, and I didn't like it.
I think the problem is that it wasn't necessarily a found footage movie. It was a horror movie that had cam footage in it.
Correct.
So,
but that's the only part that really jumped out to me as not being a found footage aspect. Like, everything else, they justified, no matter how flimsy. Even the guy going out to check the generator at night took the camera with him for some dumb reason, but he did.
It was right at the end. I guess they wanted to, for whatever reason, they wanted to make sure that the audience wasn't lost. I don't know. I guess I'm sad. It's not great by any means. So,
mm-hmm. So I get it.
Anyway, Bob, did you see it?
Yeah, I saw it. I guess we're going for here, because I saw the title Paranormal Activity next to Ken. I'm going, here we go. And the only scene that actually made sense of Paranormal Activity was her getting thrown up to the ceiling and then drawing that circle in the window. But other than that, like, I was waiting for a jump scare, like you said, and I got that. I got the jump scare, but nothing else in the movie. Nothing else in the movie. Like, I'm going, what?
So
I was questioning myself. I'm going, why am I watching this?
I guess in retrospect, that was the witch.
It must have been, yeah.
There was a witch that worked for the family that would oversee the transference.
Yeah, and then I saw the grandmother. She was, like, cutting a potato, but then you look closer, she's cutting her own hand.
Yeah.
But as you said, like, this wasn't a good movie. It's like, there were scenes I was waiting for. I got them. That was it. I can move on now. I could have moved on before.
All right, speaking of moving on.
So shall we find our fairy godmother or fabulous godmother?
Oh, yes.
Well, fabulous!
And discuss Cinderella, directed by Kay Cannon, starring Camila Cabello, Billy Porter, Nicholas Galatzine, and Idina Menzel. And let's see, Pierce Brosnan and Minnie Driver.
And there was also who was the talk show host, the guy?
The worst person James on the Corden. Planet, James Corden.
Yeah.
Who I can't stand.
Oh.
But that's
who likes him?
He pees out of his front tail.
Can I start? Can I?
I hope you.
I have this. What do I say? I've had enough of Cinderella remakes of any kind. So now they've made it a singing with somebody who I believe cannot sing in any way, Camila Cabello, because she's terrible. So I always resort to my 14-year-old and ask her. I said, look, am I reading this wrong? She's like, no, Dad, she can't sing. I said, okay, good, because my daughter's a singing major, so I thought maybe I'm missing something. She's painful. And her acting is just as bad as her singing. Like, absolutely awful. So as this movie progresses, and they've changed the story a little bit, and she's doing her shopping, and she meets the prince, I'm like, this guy is stiff. Oh, my God. I thought Camila Cabello was stiff. Nope, this guy beats her. And I'm sitting there going, oh. And then we meet his parents, Pierce Brosnan and
Dustin Thing in the Winnie
Driver. Winnie Driver. I'm like, you two used to be actors, right? They're Steph. I'm like, okay, now I'm really confused. And then we go back to What's Her Face from Frozen. Adina Menzel. I don't know what movie she thinks she's in, because she is booming. Her voice is taking up the whole screen. She's dancing. She's singing. She's completely on Steph. Those two stepsisters, you need to go. God, they're Steph.
Oh, they're good.
And they break out at some point these gigantic High School Musical numbers. I'm like, what? I think I'm watching the
Seven Brides for Seven Brothers is more like it.
I think I'm watching the Cinderella version of High School Musical. I'm like, they just need to find a reason to sing and dance. And I found this utterly painful. Just painful to watch in every single way. I'm like, this is designed for a 10 to 14 year old girl. And that's it. And Bob. Oh, we know that. But this is not for any adult to watch, to enjoy. This was made for kids. I need to get over it. And hopefully I never see another film like this again. I can't recommend this. Was it? But I actually got to say it was shot okay. I actually thought the directing was pretty good. I thought it was dumb for the most part. Camila Cabello was not a good Cinderella. I much would rather tell you to watch the Hilary Duff version, the Cinderella story, which is a much better movie than this one. But I'm getting to the point, like, there's gotta be something else to remake. And now they're doing Snow White, which we're gonna have to do again. I can't wait to take a big dump on that one too. But maybe I'll like it. I highly doubt it. So all I'm asking is, when we watch these movies, can we have somebody that can act in the lead role, or somebody knows what movie they're in? Because I'm not sure Idina Menzel and her are in the same movie, because they're not doing the same.
They're not.
So I'm going to turn it over to the intern, because he seems to have a lot of commentary, which is fabulous. Feel free to talk.
Okay, here we go. I saw the title of the movie, and I'm going, oh, okay. And I turned it on, looked down for a second, and all of a sudden they hear, we are a part of an something generation. I'm going, I'm in.
Rhythm Nation.
Rhythm Nation, sorry. Well, I got that wrong. Okay, we are part of a Rhythm Nation. I'm going, and then they do the same thing.
Isn't that Janet Jackson.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, but there's other parts. But this one got me in the first place, because it's hearkening back to Seven Brides for Seven Brothers with the axes, and it's the choreography for that, like, it was really good. But I agree with Simon in that, like, Camila Cabello was not the right actress singer for this movie, because her voice, compared to Idina Menzel and a few of the others ones, she's singing so softly. I'm going, what? And then you get Idina Menzel booming around, and I'm going, okay, I'll take that. But even in the duet between her, Camila Cabello, and the other lead, you gotta have someone that can, I don't know if connect is the right word, but like the voices have to be just
harmonized,
right together, not like one voice up here, the other one going down that way. And that sort of ruined it for me, like the fact that her voice wasn't as strong as it could have been, and like Simon said, she shouldn't. There was other people that could have done a better job. But altogether, I would recommend this for me, of course. I'm done.
Hold on, no, you're not done.
Yes, oh, I am
no,
done.
No. You're... Good try. Yes.
Okay.
No, we got much more to discuss than that. What did you think of the stepsisters? What did you think of the big dance numbers? Minnie Driver, Pierce Brosnan.
I've already said it was harkening back to Seven Brides for Seven Brothers with all the dance numbers that were, like, well choreographed, and then the singing was good except for Camila. And the stepsisters, like, as soft as Camila Cabello's voice was compared to Idina Menzel, the two stepsisters sort of got on the same level. They were sort of, like, almost even. I can't explain that correctly, but I know what I'm thinking. I just can't put it into a cohesive.
Why did you think at the end where Idina Menzel really knows that Cinderella is Cinderella? Did you, that appeal to you?
Yes and no. They changed the story there, like, because the mother, the stepmother, and the stepsisters don't want her. The original story, they had locked her in. They said, but then she explained, I was a great pianist, and I'm going, where's this going? But it sort of worked out not real well. And it sort of worked out. It made sense to me, but that's it.
Okay. Daniel has just texted me, people. This is hot off the press. I asked him for his review of Cinderella. I started that movie, got to the end of the first song, Rhythm Nation, and said, nope, not today, Satan. That's what Daniel said about Cinderella. Oh, well.
I thought I would have had him on my side. I guess not.
Kevin, do you have anything to say about this?
Glee presents Cinderella.
There we go.
Don't hate me, but I thought it was okay.
I don't hate you. I gave it a 4.
I like the songs. I liked, you know, when they did the whatever something boy song when he comes onto the floor and he starts singing Ten Nation Army or Seven Nation Army by,
yes.
I don't mind this movie. Hey, it's Cinderella. What can you do? It is that story. But I like that kind of that doing pop songs as the story progresses, and you know, there a lot of them were well known.
Yes.
The surprise for me was Pierce Brosnan. I'm like Pierce, what the hell is going on, man? They need money that badly? Like,
I think Pierce is born
the movie musical, and he's in, and he doesn't sing in it.
And he just keeps saying, "I'm the king. That's why you guys just got to do what I tell you." And then the daughter says, "Well, can't you do that? You're the king." He says, no, there are rules. We all have to follow. No, I mean, is it one or the other? And I did like the sister that just had no purpose. She was just sort of around and popped up, and she wanted to institute changes and stuff to the monarchy.
Couple.
But, you know, the film itself was okay. It was the Cinderella story. So what can you do there? It's just A to B. This is what it is. And did I like the leads? Not really. I liked the king. I liked a few people in it. I thought it was okay. So
yeah.
I didn't find that I was revolted to the point where I couldn't watch it or I had to turn it off.
Douglas.
This movie was not for me. It was okay, but it had several big sins for me. First of all, James Corden had more screen time than Billy Porter, which is absolutely horrendous. And I have to ask you guys, what time period did this movie take place in?
I have no idea.
Everything was old-timey, but in the opening song, they had battery-powered electric grinders going on the metal ironworks.
Yeah.
Oops.
It made no sense. That made no sense to me. But, it was okay. It wasn't for me. That's it. You know, like you said, people 10 to 14 years old, they'll probably enjoy it. I'm way older than that. I did not enjoy it.
So am I. I'm older, but I still enjoyed it. That does not say a lot.
That's fine. Everybody has different tastes. It's okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, do you think Daniel's got my Lazarus Pit ready yet?
Why don't you let him do the transitions? He asked to do them. Okay. Why do you have to get in there? Because you're worse than Dan. I want to hear what Doug has to say.
Okay. That's better than anything I would have thought of.
I wanted to see if he could bring that dead horse back to life.
Like Lazarus. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Lazarus was written and directed by R.L. Scott, and it stars Sean Riggs, Costas Mandalore, Shane Broly, and Nicki Michaud. And that's about all of the good things I could say about this movie.
Yeah, I hope to never see any of these people ever again or hear their name.
Oh, Acostas Mandalore's in all the Saw films.
Oh, man.
Yes.
Well, I that's a good reason why I've not seen any of them.
I've seen...
He's the real Mandalorian.
Four of them? Four or five of them. Kevin, this is a superhero movie. Don't you have to like it on principle?
No, I don't.
That's a superhero movie?
I think this movie should have been called Cliche, the movie.
I think it should be called Crap, We Don't Know How to Shoot a Fight Scene, the movie.
I think it should have been called Rejected. We're not making this movie.
Oh.
And three.
This film is an hour and 47 minutes, I think.
I felt longer than The Eternals.
I'm sitting here. It took me 4 days to finish this. I tried. I started. I said, I usually put movies on for half an hour, and then I go to bed. I couldn't make it through 10 minutes. 10 minutes in, I'm like, I'm going to bed. I don't care what happens in this movie. I came down, tried the next night. I said, maybe I was just tired. Maybe it was just me. This acting is awful, but Kevin put it on the list. How bad can it be?
I just saw it, and I said, oh, this looks like an interesting movie. I'll put it on.
That was interesting, yes.
Literally, this movie is every comic book origin I've ever read boiled down to a minute 45. Oh, we like that. We should put that in the movie. Oh, we need a fight scene here. We'll put that. Well, we're going to put the worst bad guy you've ever seen who can't act as this. Like, literally, this is some independent film that Kevin ran across by accident on Amazon Prime and put it on. This is terrible acting, terrible editing. I think this film needs to be edited, completely redone. Maybe when they're shooting fight scenes, they actually want to look like maybe they've hit somebody at some point. And maybe some dialogue that would help them out with their plot a little bit more, other than, I'm going to catch those creeps. Oh, my God. Didn't we kill you? Are you back from the dead? Oh, my God, Kevin. Complete and utter garbage is what you made me watch. But I did finish it.
I didn't
watch it this morning.
It was garbage.
I was watching the beginning of this film, and I literally expected the character to say, this is a pretty crazy situation, me getting shot at here. I bet you wonder how I got this far. And then flashback to 3 days. This movie was cliche after cliche. It was just bad. I hated everything about it.
This is so funny.
No comment. Did you see it?
Yeah, oh yeah, I saw it this morning, and I had the feeling I was watching an updated version of Darkman.
Darkman is good though.
Darkman,
I know,
has
but
an ash.
But it's been done. I don't need to see it again. Okay, Darkman, Deadpool, and there's one other one, Spawn maybe. But I don't need to see these movies again, and I felt like I was watching them again. There was just so much, like, Simon and Doug even said, like, there was just so many cliches in it. Like, I have to agree.
It almost felt like it wanted to justify an R rating to be gritty, so they felt they had to throw motherfucker in every so often. Just no reason for it. They just threw it in to get the R rating, it feels like.
Mm-hmm. Well, they shouldn't have.
They shouldn't have made this movie.
They shouldn't have just made the movie, yeah.
So should they have gone on a voyage to avoid making this movie?
Oh.
Potentially.
So Voyagers, written and directed by Neil Berger, starring Colin Farrell, Ty Sheridan, Lily Rose Depp, and Fionn Whitehead.
Okay, I'm going to start because this movie is the number one movie worst on my list for the year. I watched this about 8 months. I must have watched this like the week it came out.
Wait, worse than Lazarus?
Lazarus is number two on my list.
Okay.
I'm sitting there going, this was painful. Like, science fiction done badly. At least Lazarus, I looked bad, and I knew what I was going into. Somebody spent some money on this film. It actually looks nice. Shot on one location spacecraft, and they basically ripped off Lord of the Flies.
Well, yeah, and that's the movie.
Done yeah. badly. Lord of the Flies done by, like, a high school troop. If Ansel Elgort, isn't he in this movie?
No, Ty Sheridan.
I'm done. Buddy, why are you in this film? Like, Colin Farrell, I know, needs cash because he's not doing anything now. But this is just dumb. Like, it's like literally they're staring at each other, reading their scripts like monotone aliens. I must stop you from doing that. We're not allowed to because Rule 46, I couldn't care less. Oh, my God, this was another three-day viewing. This is 2 hours of pain. Absolute, complete, and utter pain. I'm like, I've seen Lord of the Flies. I've read the book. Why am I watching the space version of it? Awful piece of crap. I just dumb. The visuals are terrible. Dialogue, stale. Acting, if we're calling this acting, it's equivalent to some high school musical productions I've seen or drama plays I saw when growing up or even stuff I've actually paid for later in my life, some pantomimes I've seen with my kids. Truly awful garbage and deserves the number one spot in my list and it's never coming down even though Lazarus may overtake it by the end of the year the more I think about it.
Okay, next. Anybody?
Brock? Okay. Buddy?
I saw it. I felt the same way you did about it because I'm going, they grow up and 86 years later they're supposed to be on the next, on the planet, coming to the planet. And I'm going, this, just come on, keep going. I know Colin Farrell dies. Yeah, I'm ruining that part. Who cares? But it's just, it just kept going on and on. And like they said, we can do what we want. Like you said, Lord of the Flies. It's just, there was just so, like, not as many characters. Well, there wasn't many characters, but it didn't feel like as many characters as the Eternals did. But it just got to that point where I'm like, I don't care anymore. There were certain scenes that I thought were okay, but they were just okay.
And that's it. Okay.
Well, I think my biggest problem is that the movie just didn't make sense to me. The fact that they sent this group, the Earth was dying because of, I guess, global warming, some kind of global catastrophe. The Earth was dying. So they send this troop out. Was it supposed to save the Earth or just save humanity? I didn't get that aspect of the movie at all. I got that it was a riff on Lord of the Flies, but like everybody said, the locations were fine, but I don't know. It just didn't work for me. Colin Farrell, bless his heart, he tried. He really tried to do good in this movie, but then it's all wasted at the end when they have the CGI walking down the hall and people aging. That just looked like crap to me. Any goodwill was lost on that with visuals. It just wasn't a good film. I did not like it.
No, I agree with all you guys. It's not a good film. Colin Farrell is okay in it for the 5 minutes he's in it. I think the premise is that you would send the ship out into space. Originally, it was supposed to be unmanned, and the kids would be raised by robots or something. I don't know, but they decided that it would go earlier if Colin Farrell was there. So in theory, they were like the advanced colonization force. So if they started out, they would be able to set up a colony for the rest of or whatever was of humanity that would follow. So,
but they wouldn't be able to follow until like 86 years in the future, though, right?
Yeah, but I think one of the tenets of science fiction, you got this in an Interstellar, but was that the first people, it's going to take a long time to get to where they go. But in that, during that time, humanity on Earth is still evolving, and our technology is still evolving.
Okay.
So in theory, we may develop faster than light drives. So we may beat them. They may arrive at the planet and find it's already bustling with humanity. And that's happened in other science fiction stories. Okay. In that, in theory, that ancient Earth technology from 86 years ago is now obsolete. They found ways to go through jump drives or stargates or whatever the case to get through to where they wanted to go faster. So I think it's just almost like a fail-safe. Let's try this and hopefully we'll either follow suit or we'll develop something that will get us there faster. But yeah, it definitely was like, how would this very small group of kids, I assume that the ship itself was filled with more embryos so that they could probably create more people down the line, not just the kids that they would create and raise on the ship. And to be honest, 86 years is not that long in the grand scheme of things on the ship. You know, you probably would have some of the first generation would still be alive when they landed. They'd be elderly, but it's another just a silly platform for doing a Lord of the Flies style teenage rebellion thing where what do you do if you repress everybody's sexuality and their emotions and then take the drink away that's repressing it? Well, they go nuts and do Lord of the Flies. And then the redemption arc is that they come to terms with the fact that they did this, they can be better, and they just did better without having to go back on the blue, whatever, blue drink. It's not very good. So it's just it's a kind of a time waster again. I enjoyed Cinderella much more.
So did I.
So you'd send this movie to the Velvet Underground?
Absolutely I would. Yes, I want some music. Intern, you're up.
I started watching this, and I like the fact that it's during a certain time and during a certain time of music, and it got there for me, but I sort of get bored with it, so I got lost. I don't know why, but it just didn't connect with me for some reason. I don't know why.
Wow, I'll pick up from that point. I'm 100% in disagreement of everything you said.
Of course.
I thought this film was phenomenal. I forgot it even came out. I want to thank Kevin for adding to the list because I had it on a list and I forgot it came out. I can't believe I forgot. But I did. Kevin's like, am I going to spell it under? I'm like, oh my God, that came out. I totally missed it. Mm-hmm. So I sat down to watch it, and no, I know their music casually. My dad was a big fan of them, so I knew their first album. Mm-hmm. I knew Lou Reed's solo career a lot better than I knew the original stuff. I mean, I had listened to a lot of Marianne Faithfull because I quite enjoy her music. But I like the way this documentary was shot. It's probably one of the best films I've seen all year. I love the way they shot the film. So you weren't just watching like documentary footage. So they have like an interview with somebody and showing footage of what they're talking about at the same time. I'm like, what a great idea. So instead of just having talking heads talk at me all the time, you're going to show me what they're talking about at the same time. And then if you didn't understand something, it explained it a bit more. And I like it out of talking heads I hadn't seen before. Like that Andy Warhol guy was phenomenal interview. And some of the people they were interviewing, they were really smart people they were interviewing. They had a lot to say. And I like how they actually knew their subjects, like, more than personally. Like, they understood, oh, yeah, he was going through this, and he was influenced by this, and this happened, and we did this. I'm absolutely blew me away how much I enjoyed this. And in the scenes that we wanted to see when they opened up, like, the full screen or, like, the concert footage, and I was like, I want this now because I'm so familiar with him and the band and what they're going through. Like, I'm ready for this full scene because you prepped me for it. So I wanted – Todd Haynes to me just blew me away with this film. I mean, I think this is the definitive Velvet Underground documentary. I think if you're a fan of this band in any way, this, you need to watch this. You learn so much more about Lou Reed, where he was coming from, where he's going. I had no idea he was so involved with Andy Warhol and all that kind of stuff. Marianne Faithfull was interesting. I mean, I knew Nico and just stuff like that. And the breakup of the band I didn't know about and how it broke up and how him and the drummer hate each other. Scott's at one point and that was the end. And I just thought this was great. I gave it a 10 out of 10.
I'll have to rewatch it based on that.
Can I don't remember. How does Marianne Faithfull? I don't even remember her being in the movie.
Am I thinking of Nico then?
Nico is probably, she's the German singer that was brought in.
Hang on, wasn't Marianne Faithfull in this doc? Am I thinking of the wrong person?
I was wondering that myself. Let me.
Hold on, did I screw it up? Am I thinking of the German Nico lady? I thought Marianne Faithfull was in this too.
No, Marianne Faithfull was English.
She was Maybe I'm getting confused with Nico. Am I just, who's the blonde chick? Is that Nico?
That's Nico.
Yes.
No, then yeah. I'm an idiot. Okay, Nico was fascinating. I don't know where. Okay. I think I'm going to think she's Marianne Faithfull because my dad introduced me to Velvet Underground and Marianne Faithfull around the same time. Mm-hmm. So probably in my head I'm thinking it's Marianne Faithfull. But yeah, Nico was great, which I didn't even know she was still alive. So that was kind of neat.
See, Lou Reed and Marianne Faithfull both had comebacks around the same time in the late 70s, early 80s.
Okay, maybe that's why my dad made me listen to it.
I enjoyed it. I agree. It's one of the best rock documentaries that I've seen. Although I'm waiting for the Beatles Get Back to be the most dominant one. This one, I was aware of the Velvet Underground. I was aware slightly of their origins, but I think that when it comes to rock music, we study the British Invasion a lot. We study Elvis. We look at the California scene. With the Beach Boys and such. We look at the Detroit rock scene with Kiss and things like that. But for some reason, New York, I don't know. I think we just kind of glance over New York. And I think the Velvet Underground are like the grandparents of the Ramones and the other punk bands of the 70s that come out. And I think what I liked about the Velvet Underground, unlike a lot of other bands, was the melding of art and music. And in the 70s, other bands would follow suit who took some lead from that. Like you see Genesis tried to do a lot of that on their stage shows and Pink Floyd and the other art rock bands. But the Velvet Underground were like the original art rock band and the primary New York scene band. And having Warhol in as their manager and an instigator in a lot of ways, and he's the one that brought Nico in. He's the one that wanted to film them and do a lot of stuff with stuff on the backgrounds as they played music to influence mood and so forth. That you saw a lot of that. If you look back at things like Blow Up and stuff like that, you start to see that art on stage with music echoing back to Britain into the late 60s. As they were being influenced by that. It's a cool look at, and also look at how things fall apart. Bands often just fall apart. And, when you have dominant personalities like Lou Reed, things do happen where you come at odds with others and that's it. That's all you can take.
Okay.
And the magic ends.
Well, Lou Reed came off exactly what I expected. The biggest dick on the planet. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a very unfriendly person, I think, the most who encountered him.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of got that impression, so I wasn't really surprised about the demise of the Velvet Underground, because, I mean...
But he was also a musical genius, right?
Oh, I agree.
So...
But just from side note, I did get to meet Lou Reed, and he was so nice. That's all I have to say.
Well, he did overcome his addictions by the time you met him.
Yeah, I didn't meet him until probably the 90s.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I knew of the Velvet Underground, but I couldn't name any of their songs or anything. The only Lou Reed stuff I knew was the singles, the stuff everybody knows, Walk on the Wild Side, It's a Perfect Day, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I love this documentary. ever since I watched it, I've been listening to Lou Reed solo stuff. I've been listening to the first three Velvet Underground albums. That song Heroin that ends the documentary that's on the first Velvet Underground album, that song is so powerful. It's neat. My one thing, the documentary was a little slow. It took over half an hour, a quarter of the documentary for the band to form. But I guess you do kind of need that information on each of the artists and the art scene in New York at that time, because you do need to know that stuff to understand where the Velvet Underground came from and what they were about. But once the band formed and we started to hear their music, it was astounding. Todd Haynes did an amazing job on this. I started off not really getting into it. I wanted more music, less history. Mm-hmm. But by the end, I was all in. Like I said, I've been listening to their music ever since I finished watching the documentary. It was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think my dad probably introduced me to this music probably when I was like 12, I'll say, maybe 13, 14. And I've always remembered the line, waiting for my man with a $20 bill in my hand. I always remember that line from that song. I just love, every time I hear it, it just reminds me of those times with my dad. Maybe that's why I like the Velvet Underground so much, because I grew up listening to them. Driving around with my dad, going to hockey all the time. So I don't know, I just think this thing was phenomenal and blew me away, so thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome.
I'll have to rewatch it, because I know it sounds like I missed a lot.
And it was a different form of documentary. Todd Haynes used montage. He didn't use
perfect
talking heads. It was all loved montage, it. And it was...
Loved it. Is that it, Doug? Are we done?
That's it. That is the last film.
That's what I thought. So I guess I have to ask, what did we buy, guys?
What's that?
It looks like Daredevil.
Marvel Studios Daredevil. Wonder what that's from.
What are you talking about?
Just came
was that
up
from Disney Plus Day?
No, it wasn't introduced on Disney Plus Day. This was just a surprise that popped up in my Twitter feed. Someone says they uncovered it. It's not an officially released. Anyway, did anybody buy anything?
I did not this week.
Wow. Was there no fire sales anywhere?
I spent all my money on getting a tattoo, so.
Oh, well, you haven't revealed that yet, though, so we have to wait.
No, it's only half done.
So we don't know yet. I told you not to tell people about the Extra Features logo you have tattooed on yourself.
I did buy some.
What'd you get?
I bought, for $5, I got Unbreakable. I bought an American Werewolf in London.
For the fourth time.
Nice. Yeah, which I love. And then the new 4K Transfer of Glory, which is a great film. Downer. I haven't watched this yet, but I picked up the new 4K Transfer of Ten Commandments, the Charlton Heston film.
Do you remember that being on, like, during Easter, like, every weekend, Kevin, in Canada?
Christmas, man. It was, like,
constant.
Or Ben-Hur or Ten Commandments. Actually, Ben-Hur would be Easter. Ten Commandments would be Christmas.
That's why I saw these films when I was younger, because we only had – we didn't have cable until – we didn't have a TV for a lot of the time, so I only had three channels in black and white, so – not color, black and white, so I can only watch. And then we got somebody gave us a free TV. So then I moved up to three channels in color.
I remember going to family gatherings, and then no matter what happened, that we'd be down. The kids are all in the basement, and these movies would be there. And then while we were having the show, I bought something kind of cool, which I didn't know existed, which I'd have to watch once we finished, which is the new cut of Rocky IV, Rocky versus Drago. So Sylvester Stallone has done the ultimate director's cut, and he's recut Rocky IV, taken out a lot of the propaganda. Apparently, it's quite good. So
will there be more or less montages?
Less montages, I gather, yeah.
More do video game buying count as buying things? Because all I bought was a video game.
So you
hold on, I got it right here.
2004, right?
Yeah, I found this game called Sphinx for PS2 and The Curse of the Mummy. I don't know.
What's the copyright year?
2003.
Wow, baby. I guess
so. I will try that out this week at some point, probably tomorrow night. I got to see. So I guess that's it. So until Mr. Prince quits his job as a stripper, if they make it.
We have bad transitions without Daniel.
We have bad transitions with Daniel. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.